The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible 142 finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
Now, have a listen to this.
Tell me, which do you favour, your fingers or your tongue?
Your Grace?
Fingers or your tongue? If you got to keep one, which would it be? I could just cut your throat.
Every man needs hands, Your Grace.
Good. Tongue it is.
Your Grace, please. I won't. Your Grace.
Sir Ilyn, who better than you to carry out the sentence?
I beg you, please.
I'm done for the day. I'll leave the rest of the matters to you, Mother.
Apologies for anyone having their breakfast, but that was the bloodthirsty King Joffrey in the hugely successful HBO series Game of Thrones. The man playing the late King's part was Jack Gleeson, who joins me now. Jack, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
We're going to talk a bit about Thrones and your new stage venture, Bears in Space, the director of it. Dan Colley is with us as well. Dan, you're very welcome too.
Thanks very much.
And I was feeling guilty about the fact that I'd never seen a Game of Thrones or any episode of it. And then I heard you recently say that you don't really watch it, or you haven't really watched it yourself.
Well, yeah, I think I'm more justified in feeling guilty about that than you are, certainly. Yeah, I mean, it's not an indictment of the show at all. It's just a personal thing of kind of it's hearing your own voice in a voicemail times 10, you know, when you see yourself on screen acting. So it's just very cringeworthy for me. So
I can't
watch it.
Why are you very self-conscious?
Well, I mean, as I say, it's like I mean, I suppose you're a broadcaster, so you hear your voice all the time. But for normal people, it's when they hear their voice, they cringe. But when I see myself on screen, I cringe. And also, you know, when I'm looking at scenes that I'm not in, it's kind of like, oh, I know that tree is fake, and you know that guy was hung over that day, and you know all that stuff. So the illusion is broken. It's harder to appreciate
the
reality.
What the viewer would. Does that mean you're very self-critical?
I think all actors are, to an extent. I think a lot of actors are quite perfectionistic, and that's what kind of drives them. But you know, I don't see much of a future in professional acting for myself. So I don't, you know, get too hard on myself when I don't do a good job, because I think, oh well, it's just a bit of fun.
And why don't you see a future for yourself in professional acting?
I'm not sure. I suppose. I mean, I've been doing it for so long, since I was a little kid, that the time just came that it just kind of got a bit stale, I think, and I kind of just realised I'd try my hand at something new, because it's good to try new things, I suppose, and it just didn't feel fun anymore. I may well, you know, go back to it after a while, but for the moment, I'm 22 and want to kind of try new things, explore new adventures.
And did the disillusionment, we'll say, come with the fact that Game of Thrones is such a phenomenon globally, and that you became an overnight sensation, a celebrity?
I think that was part of it, but a very small part of it. I think if I genuinely enjoyed the acting side and the professional side and actually doing the job, I'd be able to put up with perhaps not enjoying the celebrity side of it too much. But it's a mixture of both. It certainly wasn't the reason I decided to stop acting, not at all.
Yeah, but it was something that
It was something that irked me a tiny bit, but you know, it's kind of a first world problem. It's not something that I you know, cry about.
No, but we're going to remind you of a recent contribution you made. I think it was at Oxford. You were talking about the nature of celebrity and the internet. So you might want to escape it, but here it is. Here it is now.
If I'm being honest, upon hearing the joyous news that I received the role of Joffrey, I really did not expect all of the subsidiary things that come with being an actor on a successful television programme. What it led to was a sharp shock when I realised that I had, unbeknownst to me, signed an invisible contract which required me to enter into a strange new echelon of society. People suddenly wanted to take pictures of me on the street, and journalists were interested in what kind of socks I preferred. And, you know, among certain groups of my peers, my jokes seemed to become a lot funnier, which perhaps was all the comedy books I was reading at the time, or perhaps it was sycophancy, I don't know. It was an atmosphere from which I instantly wanted to retreat. I detested the superficial elevation and commodification of it all, juxtaposed with the grotesque self-involvement it would sometimes draw out in me. The exclusion and subtle differentiation that comes with a rather diluted, even a rather diluted form of celebrity that I had embarrasses me.
Strong stuff, Jack.
Oh, geez. Thanks for subjecting me to that. Oh, my God. Got my head in my hands.
Was that a bad day in the office?
Oh, God. I just sound so pretentious.
Yeah, but you're obviously serious. You took it very seriously enough to make that contribution and to say what you did on that occasion.
To an extent. I mean, Oxford invited me over and I kind of, you know, they said you could prepare a speech and, you know, I just kind of picked that topic and kind of just wrote it. I literally wrote it the night before. So perhaps I came across slightly more polemical than I would have liked, but I mean, it's true to an extent, but I take it with a pinch of salt.
Now, what about the superficiality that you spoke about?
I think that's true to an extent, but I think it's up to the person how much you give yourself to it. You know, you can sell pictures of your marriage for money, and you can, you know, name your baby after a new shampoo or whatever. You know, obviously it's facetious, but I think. You know, it's up to the actor. You know, someone like Cillian Murphy, for instance, for whom I have a lot of respect. You know, he's an actor that has a lot of integrity, but he's also a celebrity who doesn't feel the need to buy into the superficiality. But it's also sometimes not a choice for an actor. I think, you know, a lot of actors don't like engaging in that kind of lifestyle, but they feel it's necessary. And sometimes it is necessary to progress your career. So it's kind of an unfortunate, it's a necessary evil sometimes.
So from your point of view, what was the worst thing then about it? I'm sure there are many good things about Game of Thrones. What was the worst thing that happened to you over the course of your being on the show?
Jeez, I mean, I'm not lying when I say there were very few. There were some times when I'd planned a holiday, say with friends during the summer, and perfectly in line with my shooting schedule, and then they'd call me like 2 days before and they'd say, oh, we changed the schedule and you have to come back from France or from Interrailing or wherever I was. But you know, I had to leave France, but then I got to go to Croatia to film the next 2 days. So, I mean, it's...
First world problem.
Yeah, exactly. A first world problem.
As you say.
Yeah.
And your friend's finding her jokes a bit funnier? Was that you, Dan?
Laugh, Dan.
No, I don't think he's funny at all, actually. I did cast him in a comedy play, but he's mostly the straight guy, so...
Yeah. No, again, that was a comment, just a pretty flippant comment. Just, I suppose, like, when I meet new people, sometimes I wonder if...
Game of Thrones
perhaps,
they're interested
yeah.
in.
But it's not something I labour on too much, but okay. It was just a comment, I thought.
Passing phase. Yeah. And by the way, you said you've been acting from a very young age. How did you get into it first day?
I got into it because there was a drama school just going on in the community centre in Beechwood, where I live beside, called Independent Theatre Workshop. And my older sisters, Emma and Rachel, went there on a Saturday morning, just doing acting and dancing classes, and I just did it for something to do on a Saturday morning, and my sisters did it, and...
And that's where we met, actually.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Jack was just a kid.
Yeah, so. Dan, bizarrely, was my teacher in many ways.
That's my peer. Yeah, only kind of true.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. My director, my authority figure.
Yeah.
As a
because you featured in Batman Begins, that was one of your big roles as a young fella.
Yeah. Well, that was amazing, yeah.
How did that come about?
Pretty banally, yeah. It was just, I don't know why they were looking in Ireland or the British Isles for an American kid for the film, but I just heard about this audition and went, and I looked a lot younger than a lot of my peers, so I think I got the part because I had some experience, but looked quite young.
And have you been offered many roles, though, in the wake of your performances on Game of Thrones? Have they been flooding in?
To an extent. I mean, it's kind of a weird position that I feel kind of very ungrateful, because I'm kind of eschewing the potential to succeed in a career that a lot of people I know would love to succeed in. But I think, again, if I put myself out there, then I'd probably be in the fortunate position of being able to make a career out of it. But I think I don't put myself out there, so no one really cares.
No plans to go to Hollywood, in other words.
No.
Not at the moment. Not until you get your taste back for it. And you also, while you were with Game of Thrones, you continued your studies at Trinity.
Correct, yeah. I mean, a lot of people seem to be kind of surprised by that, or they see it as something that should be respected. But I filmed for Game of Thrones, or I did film for Game of Thrones, about like a few weeks of the year, maybe 3 weeks of the year. And that was mainly during summer. So people always ask, oh, how did you balance study with filming? But I pretty much didn't have any interruption to my studies because they filmed during the summer only for a brief time, for me anyway. So, yeah, I shouldn't be given any undue respect for that.
And what are you studying, by the way?
Philosophy and theology.
And why are you studying?
Why? I mean, that's the perennial question, isn't it? Why? That's exactly why.
Tell us why.
Yeah, it's exactly these kind of contributions in the rehearsal room that makes him such a star.
Yes, it is.
Frustrating. Yeah.
Sometimes I'll have to stand somewhere and he'll ask me why, Dan.
Are all his friends delighted?
Well, Dan studied philosophy as well. So
oh, I see. I see. Philosophical bunch we have here. Yeah. So what about Jack? Has he changed as a result of his role in one of the biggest TV series of all time?
Yeah, he has changed. Yeah, he's a lot meaner. He's more willing to cut out people's tongues, that kind of thing. Yeah.
A nasty friend.
But no, I think pretty much the opposite. Jack's always been Jack, and you know, I worked with him as a director, as a collaborator, before he was in Game of Thrones and after he was in Game of Thrones.
You knew me when I was just a normal guy,
Dad. I did, yeah. Well, he was just as difficult to work with on both sides of that experience, it has to be said.
Sarcastic.
Yeah. So nothing has changed, so.
Nothing has changed, yeah. I mean, I was laughing earlier on because he's calling himself a perfectionist, you know. That would be maybe a credit to you if you learned your lines.
True, which is something I need to do because the show we're releasing for
tell
is
us
on
about
tomorrow.
Yeah, tell us, Dan. Do you want to tell us all about Bears and Space?
Yeah, we're opening two shows actually in the Project Arts Centre tomorrow, and we're running till Friday. One is called Human Child, which is a sort of a fairy story. Actually, it's a changeling myth inspired by Yeats's Stolen Child. So we've got a kind of a fairy theme running through the show today. Mm, you know, come away, oh human child, to the woods and waters wild, and it's a changeling myth. You know, about fairies who coax a child away and replace it with an enchanted version of themselves, and she finds her way home. It's a funny, scary musical hour, and then Bears in Space, which features our very own Jack Gleeson.
And Aaron Heffernan and Anne Quinn and Karen McCauley.
That's right. Jack very much in the supporting role, but then everybody's sort of supporting each other, I think. Bears in Space is a comedy show. The subtitle is Bears That Are in Space, so you might be able to guess what it's about.
It's about the banking crisis in Vienna.
It's not,
in
Jack.
The
it's about
18th
Bears
century.
In Space, actually.
It is, yeah. Yeah, it's a 1 hour kind of comedy romp, so to speak, about two cosmonaut bears hurtling through space trying to find the cure for an illness that's ailing one of the bear's lovers.
It's really fun. Working on it, it's like you spend all day laughing with your friends.
It's basically, when we were writing the script, Owen Quinn, who's a member of the company, he's the writer of the script, but we all kind of get together and basically try and make each other laugh from 9 to 5 every day, and the jokes that we laugh at get put in.
And then tomorrow night we'll see if anybody else
will laugh. We have a very
special guest. What sort of audience is it aimed at?
I think the thing about Bears in Space is there's no swearing in it, or there's no risque allusions at all. There's no, you know, nothing to do with sex, but the humour is very much of a kind of a college adult style. So I think kids can go and they'll enjoy it, but we didn't have the kids in mind when we were writing it.
Satire? Would it be satire?
It's kind of like zany comedy, I think, you know, and it's really thoughtful. We think an awful lot about why jokes are funny, and sometimes jokes which are perfectly funny but aren't quite right for the show don't make it in, you know. That's how good we are, you know. We throw away good material.
But what's nice about it is that it's kind of sprinkled, you know, it has some kind of soul that we like to not, you know, ram down people's throats, but we kind of try and sprinkle themes of love and friendship and duty all over it, so people come out with hopefully their ribs cracked, but also kind of with some kind of parable moral in them as well.
And puppetry is a big part of it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Puppets are great because they're like humans and they've got human-like qualities, but they're not quite. So people kind of endear themselves to puppets an awful lot quicker than they do to humans. I mean, even gorgeous ones like Jack Gleason or whatever. But it adds a kind of a comic potential, but also I think people really enjoy seeing themselves in things which aren't human, you know. That really sort of heightens the drama of it, often heightens the comedy of it, and heightens the pathos, you know, people's empathy with it. So that is a big part of it. They're sort of like tools for our storytelling.
And the puppets are made by Aaron Heffernan, who's a genius puppet maker, and he can make a puppet out of a bloody hat and a pig's tail, if you'd ask him.
And Aaron is from Love Hate.
Aaron is from Love Hate.
He plays the character.
Oh God.
He plays the character.
So, Gav.
Sorry,
he's a detective inspector.
He's a detective.
You didn't even know. You're too busy. You're too busy thinking about celebrity and what it was doing to you.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm too self-obsessed. No, I have seen Aaron in it, and he's fantastic.
And he's a very puppet maker as well. You're bringing it to Edinburgh as well.
That's right, yeah. So that's when we'll see who the audience are, I think, you know. So this is the idea. We're doing a few shows in the Project Arts Centre, and then on Saturday in the Civic Theatre in Tala, and then those are our previews to bring it to Edinburgh Fringe Festival for the month.
And what about the important business of making ends meet when it comes to a production like this?
Yeah, that is, I mean, that's a big question, you know. I think that is a big question. And we've
How many of you are directly involved in it?
There are six sort of core members who are involved in it. It's plenty of mouths to feed. Yeah, that's right. And but it's also plenty of people's money to lose as well in the meantime. We've been really, really lucky and resourceful. We've been making it for nothing. And all of us have kind of been making our living elsewhere. You know, I do a bit of teaching and some of us, you know, work in other aspects of the theatre, which are better funded. But, and also we've been asking people for their time for free a lot of the time. But now we're just sort of getting to this stage, not with these two shows, but with our next show, where we've got a little bit of development money from the Arts Council, just to sort of see what the next show will be like, what would happen if everybody in Collapsing Horse got paid for the show, you know. So we'll see how that goes, you know. We're really excited about it.
Having Jack Gleeson as part of the cast is not a hindrance, says you, Dan.
It's not a hindrance, but it's not a help really either.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, as your producer said. No,
yeah,
it's good and bad.
On the subject of Game of Thrones and money, are you a filthy rich young actor now at this stage?
Oh, you know, you never ask a young lady her age, and you never ask, you know, an old man how much he makes, John.
I see. Answer the question.
Yeah.
Are you well off?
Okay, I'll answer it thusly. It's enough that I still ride my bike around town 24/7, so I don't have a car, I don't have a private jet.
But you were well remunerated for your role, let's say.
We'll say that.
Okay. Well, listen, it's great to have you in this morning, and good luck with the new production. As you say, it's on in the Project Arts Centre tomorrow night, then the Civic in Tala.
That's right, on Saturday night.
Saturday night, and then at the Underbelly venue in Edinburgh in August. A month-long run?
Month-long run, yeah.
31st July to the 20-something, 25th.
So we've got a lot of seats to sell you guys.
Good stuff. Well, listen, good luck with it, lads, and thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
And Dan Colley. It's called Collapsing Horse. Productions,
that's
as well.
Right.
Yeah, great.